Welcome to Unsuitable on Ray Radio, the award-winning financial services and business advisory podcast that challenges your old-school business practices and the traditional business suit culture. Our guests are industry professionals and experts who will challenge you to think beyond the suit and tie while offering you meaningful modern solutions to help you enhance your company's growth. I'm your host, Dave Kane. Developing a plan to promote your personal short and long-term financial success is downright difficult these days. And for the same reason, business owners should consult with a professional advisor on a regular basis to keep companies on track. Meeting with a financial planner to keep your personal finances in order is just as important. Doug Feller, a principal and financial advisor with Investment Partners, will join us on today's episode of Unsuitable to talk about what you can do now to manage and grow your wealth over the next year. And let's be honest, at the end of the day, isn't that what we all want? This isn't Doug's first at-bat with Unsuitable. He joined us about a year ago to talk about after-tax investment returns and asset allocation and asset location as well, which turned out to be an incredibly interesting episode, and we are glad that he agreed to come back to share some more valuable financial tips. Welcome back to Unsuitable, Doug.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
It looks like we upped your contract, the amount of your contract, to bring you back. You had an option to come back, so that's pretty good.
That's right. My hourly rate went up.
So those that are listening can just quickly Google Investment Partners website, and you can see Doug Feller. He's a principal with Investment Partners. He's the bearded guy in the team picture. Investment Partners is well known within the state of Ohio and across the United States for wealth management and the power of planning. Doug is a certified financial planner, chartered financial analyst, accredited investment fiduciary. In addition to that, he loves to backpack, and he is almost a professional photographer. And I've seen some of your photographs, and they are magnificent. And if I could ask you before we get started, what's one of your favorite photographs of all time that you've taken?
Well, as you mentioned, I backpack, and I've been to Glacier National Park, nothing short of 10 times. And my dad and I were in the most remote part of the park one evening, and there was a forest fire going on. Usually, you know, if there's not much snow and not much water, a lightning strike would create a fire. And so the fire had created all this smoke that lit up the sky, and the sun set right into that and lit up all the smoke, orange and red. And we have a silhouette of a mountain in the foreground, and it's just terrific.
Perfect. Perfect. And I've seen some of your photographs of Glacier, and they are just wonderful. So
it's a great place to visit as long as you don't get eaten by the bears.
Good. Well, let's talk about that backpack. You do a lot of backpacking. Do you keep a flask in that backpack for a snake bite?
No, I don't. When you're carrying all the food and clothing and everything you need for 7 days, you don't want to carry any extra weight, as nice as that might be. So we keep it pretty light.
Okay. So nothing to protect against that snake bite.
Nothing.
So let's get started. We're going to talk about financial planning today, which there's a lot of misconceptions in the marketplace about what it is and what it isn't. But I noticed in your credentials that you are a certified financial planner. Let's talk about what that means and what the difference are with that designation.
Sure. And I understand why it's a confusing question, because if you look at all the designations within the financial world, the investment world, I think at last count, there were something like 89 or 90. And so I understand when the public is looking to work with a financial advisor, planner, the confusion that exists, because nobody knows what it really means. A lot of these designations, it doesn't mean that the people didn't put a lot of time and effort into it. But when I think of the serious credentials within the industry, I would list CFP, Certified Financial Planner, is one, along with, you know, somebody that has a JD, a CPA, you know, MBA. Those are significant designations that require quite a bit of time. The difference that you're going to find with a CFP is that they have not only committed to the study, but they've committed to an exam that is a rigorous exam, as well as they're committed to the financial planning process and committed to a high level of ethics and integrity. And so that's why you find, I think, more and more of the investment world wanting to obtain that. You're seeing a lot of younger people coming into the industry pursuing it because it is a differentiator. There's one in eight investment advisors that are CFP. So the number is about 12 or 15% right now. And of course, it doesn't mean that they're terrific. It does mean that they are committed to the planning profession and the process and the approach to working with clients.
So if I'm looking to hire a financial planner, give me a couple tips on what am I looking for? What should I be thinking in as far as the process to make that hire?
Sure. I would say the number one thing is walk into an advisor's office or a planner's office with an idea of what it is you want and need to accomplish, and then begin the process of understanding if they're going to be a good match for you. So if you're walking in and all you simply need is an insurance policy, it's possible that all you need is an insurance agent. If you're looking to only find, and I only need help with investments, maybe you only need an investment advisor. If you're looking for financial planning, that's why I think it's important to search out a CFP and a financial planner who can help you with that exactly. So it's important to know, number one, what it is you need. Secondly, as you interview that person, and I always encourage people to interview multiple advisors, is this somebody I can trust and build trust with? And that sounds, I know, very cliche, but the most valuable work a planner or an advisor will do for you is keeping you, I think, from making a mistake when it counts the most. And if you're not going to trust their advice, or you can't find yourself trusting them in the future, and you're not going to take their advice when it matters the most, all of this good that can be done can be undone very quickly. So I would say, make sure you have a basis for trust. And I would say, third and finally, an important component in that is the term we talk about in the industry called a fiduciary. And what a fiduciary is it just simply means that person is going to put your best interest ahead of their own. But not only that, but they're required to do so by law. And that's a different legal standard than what might apply to a stockbroker, for instance. So I think asking somebody whether or not they're a fiduciary, you know that you can hold them accountable to that standard. I think that's important.
Good. And as far as annual contract with a financial planner or fees, how does that typically work in the industry? Or is it across the board as far as fees? Or if I wanted to hire you as a financial planner, you know, what am I looking at as far as fee-wise?
Well, it's as scattered as you can possibly imagine. And I'm probably the nerd that's read the ADV. So if anybody's ever interested in knowing more about a firm, the SEC will have that document on file, and it'll outline the fees. And as you read those, you'll find that there is some commonality. A lot of these services are provided for a fee for the investments that get managed. Sometimes there's a calculation based on net worth or a very specific formula. And then you can find advisors and financial planners that might work on a project basis or retainer basis. So it's wide and varied. So that's just a great question when you're interviewing an advisor or a financial planner to know what options you have available to you and then understand what those fees will be.
You referred to yourself as a nerd. Can you define nerd? You define financial planner very, very well. How about nerd?
I can't define that. I actually don't know what that means.
No. I think you're anything but a nerd. But financial planning, again, is one of the topics that you and I talked about, is it's not really holistic. In other words, I guess I'm just not walking in the door and say, Doug, I need a financial plan within the next hour. And I think you had a pretty good response about this holistic approach. So let's go in that direction.
Well, it can be holistic. Certainly, you know, financial planning. Well, let's just take the financial out of it. Planning in general, you plan for vacation. In fact, you'll probably spend more time planning your next vacation than you will your finances for the next 12 years or next 12 months. That's pretty common.
How do you know that?
From experience. all planning is understanding where you are today in the financial planning world, that's getting an inventory. And I think investors, clients, advisors do a pretty good job of taking inventory. You know what your assets are. You know what your budget probably is. But mapping out the destination, where it is that we want to get to, I find that to be the stumbling block for a lot of clients. It's difficult to project 10, 20, 30 years what retirement might look like. So determining what point B is tends to be where the process stumbles out of the gate. But once we have that, then it's just a process of mapping a plan to get from point A to point B. And to me, financial planning, the destination might change. Life throws you curveballs, and we might be aiming for point C, D, or E at some point. And that's why financial planning is not a document. I think there's this concept that you're going to walk in and talk to a financial planner. And the fact is that this probably happens. You walk out with an 80-page financial plan that goes in your filing cabinet and doesn't get implemented. Financial planning isn't a document, it's a process. And so working with a financial planner, they'll be able to help you navigate to those changing destinations. If we need to tack from point B to point C at some point, a planner should be able to help you anticipate what some of those things are. And then finally, ask you some of the questions that you may not even know to ask.
In an ideal world or situation, how often should I be meeting with my financial planner? Is it once a year? Is it quarterly? Where do we go? How often do we meet?
I would say as often as necessary. Certainly within reason. We're all capped in the service industry with the number of hours we have in the year. But certainly, anytime life changes, there's some sort of life change, or your thoughts on one of your goals change, or your current financial status changes, those are great times to reach out to your financial planner, give them that information, and ask that question: what next?
Where do you start? Give us a starting point. I come to you, I need a financial plan. What's the first thing we're going to do?
Well, this comes back to the process. And I mentioned that the very first step, if you're walking into a planner's office, it's to determine how you want to engage with them. I mean, what problems do you have, or perceived problems do you have, or goals you want to pursue that you need help solving? And then determine with that advisor planner's help whether or not they can help you. They may not be the expert in retirement income planning. They might be an expert in charitable giving. So that level of engagement, how are we going to work together? What are the terms? What are the expectations? Understanding where we're going to get to, and then how we're going to be held accountable. That process of engagement is step number one. If you want to take the next step beyond that, then it's just a matter of beginning to take some inventory. Where are we? Mapping out some of those goals, where we want to get to. And then there's an analysis that goes into it and some recommendations that will follow.
Okay, we talked about financial planning from the personal level. What if I have a business, I'm a business owner, and have a significant amount of assets within that business? Does financial planning work within the, what I'll call the corporate structure or the business entity structure? Call it business financial planning, for lack of a better term.
Sure, absolutely. We tend to think of personal financial planning as working with individuals. But the process, again, I keep coming back to it being a process of engagement, of inventory, of analysis, recommendations, implementation, monitoring. That process can be applied no matter which client you're working with. And so specifically within businesses, you can sit down with the owners of the company, understanding what it is they need help with, where they want to get to, and then putting a plan in place to make that happen.
Sounds like this also, in this process, technology plays a huge role in the financial planning aspect, whether it's tracking, whether it's projections, forecasts. Do you see technology on the rise in your experience as a financial planner?
Yeah, it's technology has, I think, changed the interaction with the client. From my perspective, and hopefully they would say the same, that has changed the interaction with the advisor. And the reason I say that is, you think about 10 years ago, the iPhone didn't exist. How far we have come in just the last 10 years. Well, financial planning 10 years ago, you would walk in with all your statements. You would say, this is what I want to accomplish. We'd map it all out either on Excel or LegalPad or something like that. And we'd send you out with a Word document that said, here's your financial plan, go to it. And that was all well and good. But the next time you came back at the end of the quarter or in 6 months, my response to you was, well, send me all of this again. We're going to manually crunch all of this data again, and we'll update some of these projections. It was a very reactive process. technology has changed that. You're able now through financial planning software, certainly, but something as simple as Mint or any of these other online sites to be able to aggregate your investments, see a daily picture of your net worth. And then that feeds into a financial planner's software to be able to use some of the sophisticated planning software and be able to actively plan and reach out to the client and say, I know you didn't see this, but I did. Here are some things we need to be thinking about. Why don't you come into the office and let's have a discussion?
Okay. Now, earlier today, we had discussions about the differences between millennials and the baby boomers. Is there a different approach for each of those groups? Let's start with millennials.
Certainly. Well, they're at a different stage of life, so their needs are just simply different than the baby boomers who are retiring, who are concerned about Social Security strategies and healthcare and retirement, and how much money do I need to live off of or can I live off of with my assets? And so that's a very different question than the millennials who really, over the last couple of years, have entered into a very tight labor market. They're saddled with college debt. They're trying to figure out how to maybe start a family or buy a home, all these different things. So the starting point with millennials is different. Secondly, they are technology natives. They grew up with technology. They grew up with the iPhone. They grew up trusting a technological system that baby boomers, while they may be immigrants and they may adapt and try to stay current, don't necessarily trust the technology to deliver a financial plan. Millennials are different that way. Millennials have no trouble going out online and interacting with algorithms and computers and getting their output from that. So yeah, the approach is very different. And I'd also say the information, Google really has a corner in the information market. So with a very quick Google search, you can get a lot of financial planning advice. And I think millennials turn a lot to the internet and not necessarily to their parents' financial advisor.
To me, that's a little bit concerning that we're getting financial planning from a certified financial planner online without the interaction and face-to-face.
It comes back to what is the value that the financial planner provides and what you'll never get from technology ever, sophisticated as it might be, is empathy. And at least in my opinion, as a financial planner, to be able to walk into somebody's office and have somebody explain the various options that I have, and then be able to guide me through a discussion, a nuanced discussion about, do I name my children as trustees of my trust? Here are my concerns about X, Y, and Z. A lot of these questions that just cannot be teased out by the internet. You can get plenty of advice. Remember, there's a lot of bad advice on the internet too. So just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's right. So you have to be able to stay on top of it if you're going to trust the internet for things like this. So I think the value of a financial planner, not unlike a physician, is to empathetically give you your options and help guide you to the right decision.
From a baby boomer's perspective, what's the number one thing you're seeing in your financial plans for the baby boomer group?
Well, the number one question that everybody asks is what to do about healthcare and medical insurance, and if there's a gap, how to get to Medicare at 65. That's number one. Social Security, they've closed down some of the strategies that were available to us, but that's a close second. When should I take Social Security? And this dovetails into the bigger picture then of retirement income. How much income do my assets need to provide throughout my retirement? And my answer always is, well, financial planning and retirement income planning becomes very easy if you can tell me the day you're going to pass away. If it's 5 years from now, we take your assets, factor in a little growth, and divide by five. But if it's going to be 30 years, which the mortality table suggests is a probability, well, then we have some work to do. And so then managing and helping navigate that question year in and year out is a tremendous value, I think, to baby boomers as they're asking themselves those questions.
Our guest today is Doug Feller. He's a principal with Investment Partners, certified financial planner. We've gone almost 20 minutes and haven't even discussed or used the word investments. And that's pretty unique, pretty cool from a financial planner. You went right to the issues. And I commend you on that and appreciate all your good advice. I think we need to have you come back for a third time because we only scratched the differences. And I think we can we can have a session on financial planning for the millennials, a financial planning for, you know, the baby boomers.
And to that point, investment advisors, insurance agents, attorneys, accountants, we're all specialists. Financial planning is broad. I think you need a financial planner to understand how all of these areas connect. And it's rare that you will find that any one consultant advisor that you hire is going to know everything. So that's why it's important to have a quarterback, have somebody that can get your advisors in the room, know what they know, but also know what they don't know, and have a conversation about your financial plan. And so that's the role of a financial planner.
Good. Appreciate that. And I invite our listeners to go to your website, investmentpartners.com. And look at the various services and look at your bio. Very, very impressive. And again, I thank you for being with us today. And again, that website is invp.com. I think you'll enjoy Doug's picture. He's the guy with the beard that looks like it needs to start turning gray a little bit.